races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From a empty event center at the Horseshoe, Las Vegas. A very good Monday morning, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. This is always the particularly, it's always a funny morning here, because all of the hooting and hollering and rooting home and all the fun is over. And every Monday after NHC, I sit here in this desolate room. There's a few maintenance types that are wheeling chairs out. And the good news is you will not hear too many folding tables being put into the racks of rolling folding table mechanicals that they utilize. There's been plenty of years where this first hour particularly is filled with clunking and my trying to shout over. But they got a lot done last night. They got done more than usual, actually, last night, it looks like. And it is amazing how it transforms from this really nicely appointed gigantic race book and sports bar, because there was plenty of sports on in addition to the NHC action. Mostly basketball, obviously, and now everybody is heading home. I already saw a couple people, including Shelley Ulsprich, that from Canada. I was getting a cup of coffee, and some players are going to linger a little bit. Others, Roger Stina. I know last night I saw Roger afterwards, and Roger took the red eye home. So. They will scatter to the winds, but everybody's still, I think, enjoying and impressed by Paul Kalia's amazing performance. And there were obviously anybody that got to the top of this leaderboard here and got to the final table, the very unusual circumstance that saw Kalia and Stephen Wells both bring two tickets to the final table. So eight players representing the 10 slots. And Kalia was just perfect. He was brilliant. You'll hear from him later in the week, maybe Thursday. He actually drove from Kansas City to Vegas, and he's going to take his time going home. And if you were listening yesterday and Saturday and Friday, and I got plenty of thank yous to register, most notably Casey working the board, 6 hours yesterday, 6 hours Saturday, and of course, three and 4 hours on Friday. This is always a taxing, getting up this morning was tough. And that hour, which we may or may not ever get back, that hour time change. this was not an ideal weekend. The players were all lamenting yesterday that hour that we all lost. So, but it was typical and it was unusual, the weekend, and some of that may have been due to the only major focus of racing on Saturday being Tampa, but it was a weekend that really saw very few explosive moments in terms of prices. That was that was evident, and the players adjusted their thinking. You heard so many different voices that joined us, thanks to Rich Eng, of course, for his contributions all Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Brian Troop, who was kind of drafted into service, not somebody that's ever he I think he surprised himself how much he enjoyed sitting in. And he provided winners. I think he went about 5 for 9, give or take. There were some horses he recommended that he liked, but then there were the ones that he got up and ran to the window. Those were the ones that got the extra push. And I think he was 5 for 9, right? 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday, and 1 yesterday. But the players, it's amazing how narrow the margin is for success, failure, and glory. And that's true. Doesn't have to be here. That's true every single day we play, right? And even if you're just even if you're just hacking around on a weekday, just for some fun, or you look at a sequence, it's amazing, actually, and it's why the game is just so much fun, and why it's so infectious. Because any number of, head bobs and there's performances that only the players that picked certain horses are going to know about. And as Sheldon said to me minutes ago, half an hour ago, everybody's got a bad beat story. But there's so many nuanced moments, and they don't have to come in deep stretch or at the wire. There's people that watched a horse they picked get blocked early and lose all chance, get shuffled back, and not gain the position they were going to need. I mean, so many things have to go perfectly, and really, Doc Bustani, who you got to meet on Friday, and who was just tremendous, coming off a year that saw him turn back a serious cancer scare. Just an absolutely terrific effort. Fell a little short only because Paul Kalia was not going to be denied. He was amazing. Just the postscript, and we'll learn more obviously when we talk to him more. I think yesterday, if you were listening to, he stayed a lot longer than would have expected, actually. Usually after the win, the champion, we do about 8 or 10 minutes, and they're kind of wrung out. I mean, he was so excited, and I'm sure we'll run that piece, and Case, I'm not sure if Case was able to load last night the two segments from yesterday, but I know the players love listening back to it, and thanks to Case for getting Friday and Saturday posted as quickly as they were, because some players said to me they there were certain things they heard and they laughed about, but Kalia, the analysis of his plays is fascinating, and it's just incredible how the contest, and not limited to the contest, but as we discussed really throughout the weekend, there's so many different ways to get to winners, and in this particular case, so many ways to get to contest success and the championship. And the focus that he had on Oaklawn is going to be, carefully dissected. And essentially, he played Oaklawn all weekend. That would, and he he told you how much, you know, he enjoys Oaklawn's racing and obviously the familiarity. And he was able to, you know, to parlay it into the, you know, particularly the Saturday and Sunday that he had. So it was impressive. And then he played the final table, you know, just perfectly hitting the first two races. And from there, essentially coasted home. I mean, it sure felt like he was, you know, not losing when we got to the final table. And that is going to open up, by the way, a broader discussion, which is some uncertainty about, you know, the final table and the programming for NHC, particularly with Sunday's racing being, you know, not as exciting and conducive. You know, the players in the semifinal, the 78 players that made it to Sunday, they've got, you know, anywhere from 30 to 36 races on Sunday, and they get to use 10 electives. And the racing's just, it's just, it's Sunday for, you know, the way in which our, you know, racing office approaches, you know, have manifested, the racing's just not great. There's some small, you know, and the front half of cards invariably have the smaller fields on a day's, you know, day's card. And so Sunday has become a little, I don't know if you want to say stale or just static. It just doesn't, there's just not a lot of movement. So I know that there's a variety of discussions and some interesting approaches on all fronts. And the final table has generally proven to be a little anticlimactic. And, you know, especially so with the kind of lead that Kalia had built up. I mean, there were some fun things that went on within it, and watching how, you know, certain players were approaching it and their chances to move from potentially, you know, the Steve Nemitz had the worst luck of anybody with that. What was that? Which of the final table races was that? Was that at Oaklawn that he got caught at the wire? And he would have brought in $30-something, and it would have moved him from 10th to as high as third. So that was a rough beat, and that's you know, that's also the, you know, there was also the Oaklawn race with the 17-to-1 first time starter, the Don Von Hemel, that nobody utilized, which was very surprising. The Toby Keith. I couldn't remember that Toby Keith was Dreamwalking Farms. Congratulations to him and Don Vaughn. I think his second win and 12 starts at the meet. Anyway, the time here is always special because you're around, you know, nothing but people who enjoy the game. And what's better than that, right? Nothing, honestly. So, tremendous job by, got to mention, Michelle Ravencraft and Holly Short, who are the most appreciated individuals in the contest world that work just, you know, tirelessly to support all the players. And they're absolutely adored by everybody. So, Keith Shamblin, Tom Rooney. Tom Rooney sat in with us for like a half an hour. Had a lot of fun with Tom. So thanks to him. And then everybody that I put up his, I think I tried to take a picture of everybody that sat down. And I think I got most of them. And we, you know, we had some product exposure moments. We talked about, you know, data points and Form to Win, Equine Edge, Optics EQ, Race Lens, Christina Blacker sat in, that was funny. Sure enough, we had Christina mention the husband Dan, and he turns around and wins a race over the weekend. There's always some of that. So I'm sure we'll, over the next couple of days, I'm sure other conversations will swing into the aftermath of NHC 2023, and players will start to turn their attention to qualifying again. You don't turn right around. There'll be qualifiers this week that'll get people set up to come right back to Las Vegas. I should mention one. I'm going to mention one other player. If you weren't listening to the coverage Friday, Saturday, Sunday, story emerged through. Starting with the last chance, and you did hear George Novick. We did get a chance to talk to George on Friday, and he had an amazing week. George wins the last chance, first chance, for starters. Then starts to post solid returns on Friday, does very well on Saturday, and gets into position to potentially make the final table, forges into the top 10 with maybe three races left, gets pushed out of the top 10, and then hits the last two races, his last, I think, one mandatory and one elective, to make it into the top 10. And George ends up with $54,000 from Thursday in the last chance, and then another $80,000 yesterday when it was all done. So $130,000-something weekend for George Novick. And George has had horses for many years, and with Gary Siaka, with our barn, and now is down in Pennsylvania and has horses with sort of the Parks connection to the Siaka barn, which is Mike and Patty Farrow. And so George, known to me from the barn, and he played spectacularly. And it's funny, you talk about ways people approach this. Paul Sherman sort of touched on this with us yesterday at the beginning of the show. George basically made all his picks, and he wasn't watching boards. He wasn't making final, decisions at the last second based on price. On Sunday, at the last minute, sitting there, he obviously did. But on Friday and Saturday, he almost picked and prayed, essentially. The old fashioned, put in your picks, and he said, he didn't want to be, sitting there tense and driving himself crazy. So he handicapped, he picked, and whatever prices they were going to be, they were going to be. So everybody came into the game in different ways and learned it different ways and enjoy it in different ways. But the key is to enjoy it. So couple of result discussions. Let's shift the gears. We're going to talk to Graham Motion this morning, the Tampa action that produced Tappet Trice. People already at loggerheads about Tappet Trice going forward. This is a horse, obviously, that's got big talent, and he's heading in the right direction at the right time. Happy for Mandy Pope, who puts a lot into the game and is starting to really see dividends. And race came back slow. Don't kid yourself about the speed of the race. an 88 buyer, and on any metric, this was not a fast race. Nice rally, but it's hard to envision that, you know, without another step forward, that Tappet Rice, I mean, it's going to be asking a lot, seemingly. And you would, you would expect. We'll look forward to talking to. I haven't reached out to Todd yet. Usually Tuesdays are better for him, so maybe we'll talk to Todd tomorrow. But it was from a visual standpoint, a good effort. This is a horse that, you know, seemingly doesn't, you know, isn't able to keep in contact with the early running, and I kind of referenced losing position. You can't keep doing that. And I certainly asked Todd about that. You got to get as Rich Migliori, who will join us at 10. Rich is on his way to the rally in Albany in support of the budget initiative to provide a $400 million loan for the renovations of Belmont. So we'll talk to Rich right ahead of that. Good timing. But, you know, gaining position going forward. And Luis Saez had to, you know, really ask and exhort Tappet Rice to get involved. I mean, he was really being ridden through the turn. And then once he straightened, yeah, he passed the, you know, half a dozen or more horses. So we'll get, you know, we'll get Todd's thoughts. Classic Car Wash and Classic Legacy, much as you know, this thing was about as formful as you possibly, you know, could have. The suggestions by, for instance, Marty McGee to be against Chesterkin proved out. That was good advice. He just kind of ran around, you know, kind of chased. He ended up seventh. But Classic Car Wash and Classic Legacy both followed up out of the Sam Davis and ran well. They were third and fourth in the Davis. They were second and third here. So they'll press forward, and we'll see what Bill Mott and Mark Cassie, they'll certainly, I imagine, both will move on. We'll save the Mission of Joy discussion for Grand Motion, but that was such a fun race, the Florida Oaks. There were so many ways to go, and Free Look off the layoff, kind of dawdled early and got involved way too late, 2-1. And what was interesting, Mission of Joy and Alphabella, much as we discussed it Friday and then Saturday during the broadcast, the fact that Mission of Joy was essentially, for quite a while, twice the price of Alphabella didn't make any sense. I mean, they're basically the same horse. By most measurements, there was very little separating Mission of Joy and Alphabella, and yet Mission of Joy was a better price. Ended up going off at 5-1 and Alphabella at 3-1. So they kind of came into alignment. But early on, Alphabella was around 5-2 and Mission of Joy was up around 8-1. But but there was no way that she was going to, you know, go off that much more. But 5-1 was a price you're probably going to be happy you got going forward. This looks like a very nice filly. Shantasara was too good. It was pretty easy to sweep everything on Saturday at Tampa. There was really only one tricky horse, and that was in the maiden race. Was far from impossible to include. So, you know, hit the middle pick four and the pick five and the late pick four. And, you know, made a little bit on everything. But I tried to get clever, actually, with that Hillsborough. I thought maybe there was, you know, between Scottish Star setting the pace and that it might, you know, there wasn't going to be much pace on. Thought maybe there's a chance something unusual happens here, and I was trying to get, you know, anybody, frankly, other than the even money winner. But so I covered as many as possible to, you know, hopefully catch something. I thought maybe there was, but nothing happened. Talk of the Nation, same thing. Talk of the Nation was too good in the Columbia, right? And Skippy Longstocking proved out to be, you know, $3. Made sense to single there. The one tricky horse was Dream Concert, the Kathleen O'Connell, and that was a nice story too, because Kathleen becomes the winningest female trainer in the game's history. And frankly, we don't really need. I don't know why we have to identify specifically. She's just a tremendous horseman. Period. Male, female, or doesn't matter. So that was the Tampa action was fun and. Everybody's focus, and we'll talk to Graham. He's going to join us. Haven't reached out to Shug. The other big race on Saturday, there are a couple other obviously bigger races, but the Azari and Secret Oath, we were arguing on air. Secret Oath, to me, had a real edge here. It was going to get first run, and that's the way it came off. A nice ride by Tyler Gaffalione to be in a well-positioned and then to pounce when the opportunity arose. And it looks like Secret Oath will be, you know, just as prominent on the distaff scene this year as she was last year. Nice win for Wayne Lucas, is having a very good, you know, percentage-wise. You know, he runs a lot of horses, but he's won consistently. You had the grade one at Santa Anita and Amore. Nice decision by Brad Cox to go out there and score a grade one with Flavian Pratt and George Papapodromo. Got to get to George this week. Wins the San Carlos with that Spirit of Makina. Joe Bravo aboard. That one came at a funny juncture in the afternoon. I looked up and I didn't even realize at the time. I don't think we didn't have it on the air, but so we missed the chance for Frank's call. But I looked up and, you know, I saw that what had happened, and I realized, oh, that's that was the San Carlos. And, you know, it's the action at that point in mid-afternoon Saturday. It's there's eight screens, and it's just coming hot and heavy, and you're watching the mandatories and then the leaderboard. It might be nice that to have. I guess this is the place where you appreciate the particularly the TV broadcasters, you know, who we visit with all the time, that have got a producer in their ear, you know, telling them what's happening, what's coming next. that might be a fun experience. I can't wear those. They when we do Capital OTV, I the earbud thing, I can't do it. I don't have a future in television. We're going to talk to Carlo Vacareza because we got to hear the story about this mare. A little jewel and the Morelos kid with about as daring a ride in that Captiva Island. That was unbelievable. And I was all over that horse, to be honest. That was a fun juncture of the afternoon that was also a mandatory, and there were three that's actually an interesting aside. There were three races in a row if you were listening to the coverage on Saturday. Graham's winner, Mission of Joy, then Tappet Trice, and then Little Jewel, all had identical lead-ups to their stake wins. Maiden win, allowance win, Stake Win, all, you know, now horses in a development curve. It was interesting. But the story of this little jewel is got to be crazy. She was off for 3 years. And obviously, Carlo Vacareza, you know, this is a homebred, you know, had confidence in her that if he could get her to the races, she could win. And now she's a stake winner, and you know, becomes even more valuable to him and his operation as a broodmare. Tremendous job. 900 and something days. I on the third graph, you know, third graph gives you the number of days between starts. 943 days or something. Amazing. Started as a 2-year-old and then missed 3 years. It's remarkable. So I want to hear from Carlo. That'll be fun. Rob Atras, who is a little media shy, getting Rob on is not easy, but my God, Rob Atras, 8 wins in a row, and then, or 7 or 8, 8 wins in a row, I think, and then a 9th win after getting beat in one. He was, Dave, I was following Dave Grenick's coverage, and they think that saddling nine straight winners is the record in New York. And Rob came about as close as you can get, 9 wins and 10 starts. I mean, horse, it just at all crazy levels. I mean, you know, some short prices, but Rosa Veloce wins the correction Saturday, and she was good. She was good. She turned back all challenges. So those were some of the highlights. There's also some other, you know, maiden type performances to get to. Frank's Rocket, I didn't mention the Hurricane Birdie. You know, she was 1-5 and deserved to be. Motton Jr. And I have not, I got to watch the Big Daddy. I didn't see the Big Daddy at Turfway. But Nobody Listens for Tim Eggleston. Got to look that up. Oh, we did see the Black Cat Lacombe. Tom Amos, Famous Amos, Girl Named Charlie, wins with Edgar Morales. And I saw Tom being interviewed by Joe Christofek and had a big toothy grin on Amos. I think we will probably get to Amos because probably would be good to check in on Hoosier Philly as well. And by the way, since we're mentioning Hoosier Philly, how about a quick glance before we start reaching out to some visitors? We'll talk to John White later. Let's see what. And it's a little bit tough to read. I got a couple of things printed, but not as much as I normally would. Let's look at the Oaks, actually. Oaks future result, wet paint, 4-1 for Brad Cox. Wonder Wheel ended up at 6-1. Hoosier Philly at 7-1. And then the Emergent Punch Bowl that Nick Tamaro brought up on Friday, 11-1 for Cox. Julia Shining, 14-1. All other fillies, 14-1. Pretty Mischievous, 15-1. Guns and Graces, that ran in the Busher the other day, 20-1. Money's Gold for Todd, 24-1. Dorth Vader, Michael Yates's upset winner of the Devona Dale, 26-1. Botanical for Brad Cox, 31-1. At least Look, 36-1. That's not a terrible number at all on the Alley's Look. A cult that got some interest from guests on Friday, looking at the Oaks future wager. A cult ended up at 36-1. And from there, it starts to careen into the 60s. Justique, who I mentioned, 69-1. and watch her jump up and win the Santa Anita Oaks and see what happens to that price. Looking further down, is there anybody else? You know, here's one, that Blessed Touch that, yeah, we talked to with Tim Yechtin. 159-1. And the rest, I guess, yeah. The rest are some, you know, horses that have gotten beat in recent starts. The Oaks picture is muddled. Let's face facts. The boys' side, the Derby, excuse me, the Derby side, Forte 3-1. Okay, Tappet Trice 8-1. You watch that race and you thought, let me go get some Tappet Trice at 8-1. I don't know. All other 3-year-olds, 10-1. Practical Move, 12-1. And, of course, he follows up the San Felipe successfully at Santa Anita Derby. That 12-1, I mean, probably that seems like actually a fair price. Right now, wouldn't you think that Practical, if the Derby was run Saturday, right, Forte would be a pretty clear favorite, heavy-ish favorite. And Practical Move would be second choice, right? Instant Coffee, 19-1 coming up to the Louisiana Derby. Red Route 1, who, you know, late runner type that is going to need pace help. 24-1 on Reincarnate may very well prove to be the best of this pool. Because if Reincarnate takes the step forward after the trouble trip in the Rebel and the learning experience in the Rebel, Reincarnate could be half that price come Derby Day, honestly. Hit Show, 28-1. That's not a bad number. Go Rocket Ride, the Mandela. Very good second in his second career start. 30-1. The Derby numbers are much more distinctive and clear than the Oaks side, big time. There's a lot of horses. Actually, as you read through this list, there's a lot of horses you can see in the Derby gate, right? Assuming everybody stays healthy. I suppose I should mention Arabian Knight being plucked from consideration for Derby. That was that certainly a story that wasn't all that necessarily surprising, but still noteworthy. Skinner. How about Skinner? John Sheriff's 45-1. That's all right. Litigate is going to show up in Louisiana Derby, 66-1 for Pletcher. Two fills, 90, is that, do I have that right? 88-1. Heading for the Jeff Ruby. Where is the Cagliostro for Cherie? 189-1. 189-1. That is a silly number. That's a crazy number. I mean, Dennington was even higher. Dennington, who beat Cagliostro in that allowance, 241-1. That's what you're looking for in this thing. Because either one of those coming out of that allowance on the undercard from Risen Star. Mandarin Hero, the Japanese unknown, 116-1. There's going to be some people when we finish the prep season, some people with some tickets that are going to be licking their chops, as the saying goes. We're licking our chops to talk to some of our guests. I'm trying to decipher what Richie just told me. I guess Richie is saying that I can come to him a little bit after 10. Is that, I think that's what he's saying. All right. Well, what we're going to do, though, let's get Carlo. I want to hear this story. I'm sorry. I know that it wasn't the biggest stake. It wasn't the biggest stake of the weekend. But it was, good morning, it was one of the most interesting, it's one of the most interesting stories of the weekend, and it's always fun to talk to Carlo Bacareza. Carlo?
Yes, good morning.
How you doing?
Good.
What are they building?
Well, I'm building a new place here in Lexington, right across from campus in UK, and it's going to be like a pizza, sushi concept, and it's going to be great for the kids here at the in campus in UK.
How about you? You're unbelievable. We'll talk about the restaurant and about the Kentucky maneuvers, but right now, you got to talk about this mayor, Little Jewel.
Yeah.
Carlo,
what a
great story.
Well, it's unbelievable. I mean, she's half, maybe three-quarters of little Mike. The mayor was Hey Jude, that she was unbelievable, and she produced almost every fall that hit the races. I mean, he's a winner, and probably the mayor produced close to $6 million in purses between all the offsprings. So we got this little filly, and she was very immature. She ran the first time at Churchill Down, and I thought she was going to win the race. And she came back, I don't know, a little funny at front, no injuries, but she was kind of a little choppy. And I decided to give it some time off, so I turned him out. And one thing led to another. Every time I went to see her, I mean, she looked good, but we're trying to just to make a gallop in the field, and she was very, very short. So made a long story short, you know, 6 month passes, a year, and 2 year pass, and we decided to bring her back. And she ran at Gulfstream Park, and she finished second, a very close race. She came back and won the maiden race. And then we decided to put him in the captive island, and she won the stakes. So it's pretty kind of very rare that somebody give a 2 years off to a horse. But fortunately, you know, the horses they mine or have just one partner, that we kind of aggressive on giving time off to horses. So, and that's one of the biggest problems I have with Dr. Bramlage, that I love him to death, is when Dr. Bramlage told me you have to give this horse 6 months off, he said, I know what you're going to do, Carlo. You're going to give me a year. And when he tells me give it adequate every 7 days, give it adequate every 3 days, you know. So it's, I always try to do the best for the horse, you know. And, you know, we are doing this for fun. And it's kind of, I have the freedom to give horses as much time as they need.
Well, it pays off here. And I made the case Saturday discussing the race on the, we're out in Vegas at the Horse Player Championship, and it just felt like a spot where, you know, you wouldn't have persevered the way you did with this horse if there wasn't some talent. And so the way in which she came back, she was off, Carlo, 946 days.
Right.
I mean, 2.5 years, and
right,
she runs that good race in the return. And in fact, the horse that beat her in January came back to win. And then she breaks the maiden beautifully. Now let's talk about Jose Morelos. And Carlo, the ride he put on her was unbelievable.
Well, I mean, I was. I ran supposed to run the ride the filly, but that particular that particular weekend was the Tampa Bay Derby.
Right.
So most of the jockeys that went to they went to Tampa and different venues that they have horses at races at Fairground, races at Oaklawn. So absolutely, I was a little handicapped, and that was actually, I was dealing only with a colony of jockeys in Gulfstream Park. We tried to get Javier, but he was taken. And then we'll go down to the list, and there wasn't that many jockeys left in Gulfstream Park. And then I saw the name Jose Morales. I said, I mean, this kid is riding really well, and hopefully he's available. So I called the agent, and he was available, but it was unbelievable, man. Now, she has a lot of talent, but like I said before, I mean, the ride was unbelievable. I won't say if he would have lost, but I think some jockeys that they would be able, and maybe some of the other jockeys, maybe to be afraid of being so close to the rail, and would it be a different outcome?
Exactly right. Some might have kicked outside. He stayed on the rail. It didn't look like there was enough room. And, you know, you also have to have confidence. The jock's got to, you know, the horse has got to feel the jock's confidence to go through a hole like that. It's not like she's all that experienced. It's her fourth career start. And she was game as Dick Tracy.
Right. And don't forget it. She's a very small filly too. You know, that's another, that's against her. You know, she's not one of the big fillies. She can push a horse a little bit over, and she just find the right hole, and she went through. I mean, it just was very unbelievable. And it reminded me a little bit. I mean, I don't want to compare, like a little Mike. This filly and little Mike was a late bloomer too. Little Mike started running when he was, you know, 4 or 5, and you know, so we hope that she continued the legacy of her brother.
Big time, and she's a Liam's map. You mentioned, you know, you did mention that she was a little immature. She was a May foal too. In fact, she was a late May foal. I mean, she had everything going against her, and so this is a May 16th. So this is a horse that a lot of people would have given up, Carlo. That's why I think it's such a fun story.
Well, like I said, we you know, if it was any other owner or any other trainer, they would have given up on. I mean, who would like to pay bills for what, 26, 28 months?
Yep.
You know, where a horse don't run. I mean, I don't care if you put them in a farm at $25, $30 a day. You know, in the long run, you're talking about, you know, $26,000, $30,000 by the time you bring it back into training. So, but I always believe in this little filly, and hopefully that, you know, we keep running her, and then hopefully, you know, she become, you know, a legacy like her mother was, you know, because Hey Jude was a phenomenal broodmare. I wish I have another mare like that, you know. She died at the age of 25, 26 years old at Old Friends, and she's buried there, and but she was a sensational broodmare.
Well, and Little Jewel was her last foal.
That's correct.
Well, now a stake winner, no matter what happens going forward. And how many of the other daughters, like Little Jude and Redhead's Rule, Priscilla Marie, how many of those are your broodmare band?
No, I don't have. I sold actually. I sold Little Jude, she sold him fall to, no, a fall out of a Little Jewel sold for big money, like probably $300,000 at the Keeneland sale. And I don't have Priscilla Marie. She's gone. I sold her. I sold Little Jewel. The only one I have, the only feel I have is Little Jewel.
Wow.
That if I need to keep her. If not, Nikki will kill me.
Unbelievable. Well, and of course, this one runs in Michael's name, and the boys involved. Let's get an update, actually. And you mentioned a new restaurant. You had, you had the foresight to bring Frank and Dino's to Lexington. How's everything going?
Well, Frank and Dino's is on cruise control. Is doing, I mean, exceptional well. The French restaurant I opened is doing well. It's a small little place. It's very cozy, very romantic setting. You know, it's in, like maybe 6-7 blocks away from Frank and Dino's. And then we open this pizzeria / sushi place and in campus across the street from UK. So this would be fun, just for give back a little back to the community and I have so many kids from UK working for me and Frank and Dino and La Folie, so I think it's gonna be fun.
Outstanding. What's the French place called?
La Folie.
La Folie. I love it. All right. Well, I've not seen you in ages. Let's catch up on everything else. What else is going on in the barn?
Just like I said, we have some really nice horses. I have and running two in Tampa, Sweet Danny Girl and Jackie Spirit. They're running, I believe, the 26 in Tampa, two stake races. Then I got Trufo. He's running a Kentucky Cup at Turfway Park. The same day, Toyn is running too. They have a nice filly called Lil Gia that she's running a Turfway. And the last one will be the same day. It's a horse called Tolkien. So that's the six horses I have running the next couple of weeks. And then I'm shipping back to either Churchill Down or Keeneland. And we hope we'll have a really good meet. We have some really nice horse in the barn. I don't have that many. I have, I believe, 28 horses now in the barn. But I think we'll have a very good meet. And we're trying to point Little Jewel either to the Giant Causeway, 5.5 at Keeneland. I think that's going to be the end of mid end of April.
Yeah.
And that will be really a very good race for her. I mean, especially going 5.5 on the turf. So
Donna,
we'll see.
Doing great. Tell me about the horse that starts this week, the first time starter under Michael's name, Royal Blood.
Well, Royal Blood, she's supposed to run like 3 weeks ago, and we got a vet scratch for I don't know what reason was, and actually I wrote a letter to that colleague about that. So made a long story short, they didn't give me no reason why she was scratched. I didn't want to create any waves we breezed him before, and I was allowed to breeze it 3 days after the scratch. She was fine. She breezed perfect. And then we breezed in front of the vet, and she just was clear. The blood came back perfect. And I think we got a very good shot. She's a very, very talented filly. Very talented. A little bit of a quirky. She's kind of a nervous kind of filly. But I think we have a very good shot to win first time out.
This comes on
the 18th,
yeah, on Saturday in the 5th. You mentioned and her name jumped off the page on the entries because of the letter you wrote that appeared at Pollock Report, and it got you got, I guarantee you got a lot of support. You and I haven't spoken about it, but a lot of people appreciated what you wrote.
Well, like I say, sometimes the system, the whole system is a great system, but sometimes people that are running it, they're not true horsemen, you know. They're not. They get caught up on all this basically politics and BS, you know. I think it's down deep. If it's be more regulated and it be more, would be more horsemen involved in that group, that would be a great thing.
It's a very difficult line to draw between, you know, being cautious and, you know, making decisions. And it's a tough job for the regulatory veterinarians, but you bring up a fair point that there's some people making decisions that aren't, that, you know, in some cases have never been racetrack practitioners.
And, that's correct.
And it you know, there's some the situation in California is making the horsemen crazy.
It is. I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm blessed that I can afford it. Imagine you have an 8,000 or 10,000 claimer that you've been waiting for the race. You get crashed the day of the race, then you have to wait 2 weeks before you breeze in front of the vet. That's 2 weeks. Then you have to wait 3 weeks for the blood test to come back. That's 5 weeks. Then you have to wait for the race to go.
Yep.
And especially right now, they draw 1 week ahead. And so you have to wait another 2-3 weeks for the race to go. So you're talking about 8 to 9 weeks. If somebody has an 8,000, 12,500, even a 25 claimer, that guy's going to give up.
Yep.
I mean, he's going to pay $9,000-$10,000 on just bills alone for a 5 or 6 or 12,000 claimer. So, I mean, that's the problem. We're chasing people away. And I talked to Steve Scrinci, the vice president of racing.
Yep.
I said, why they don't get, they don't buy a machine. They sell them in Germany for like $70,000-$80,000, and you have a blood machine on premises. So you breeze the horse on a Saturday morning. 20 minutes later, after the horse breezes, you can have the blood test. You don't have to wait 3 weeks. And you do it in house. I mean, a blood test. You're testing just blood. If the blood is clear, well, we have to wait 3 weeks the test to go to University of Kentucky or University of Florida to get a test result. You can have it in-house at Palmetto's or Gulfstream Park, and it's done. And the same day the horse breathes, he can come out of the vet lease, or, you know, he can remain in the vet lease.
A viable suggestion, Carlo. It's one of the nice things about talking to someone like you, who's a business, you know, a businessman first and foremost. You've got practical solutions. You're not encumbered by, you know, some sort of institutional thinking.
Yeah, and like I say, it's not a huge investment. You know, we have the facility, we have the place. I mean, you can even convert one stall, just, you know, put tiles, white tiles, make it very, very nice and clean. Put the machine, get somebody from any hospital to come over.
Sure.
One of the vets, they come over, put the tube, a cylinder of the blood into this machine. He's made it, I think it's a company, I forgot the name of the company, in Germany. He made this machine less than 20 minutes. And at least you save those 3 weeks.
Yep. No, well, the way to justify the expense is to say more horses, you know, are going to run more frequently. It's not a tough equation to figure out.
We did a little study with our dear friend Chuck Simon about, I mean, it's between $68,000 and $83,000 per horse per race that costs the racetrack. So actually, one horse alone that going into a race after the vet scratch will pay for the machine.
Yep. Yep. There you go. And the overhead, you know, in terms of running a, you know, vet tech or whatever kind of, you know, whatever kind of personnel are necessary. That's an easily justifiable expense.
Even Steve, even you charge the owner, listen, it's $100. If you want a fast test, it's $100. I'd rather pay $100 than pay, what, would be like $3,600?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yep. Yep. No, Carlo, you're onto something, without a doubt.
Yeah, even if the test costs $200, let the racetrack pay 50% and the owner pay 50%. Done. Easy solution. It's a win-win situation for the owner, and it's a win-win situation for the racetrack. Yeah.
You're planting seeds in a lot of people's minds, Carlo. Carlo Vacareza with us off of Saturday's terrific success with Little Jewel, a very encouraging story off 946 days and now a stake winner. Carlo, one other question. I'll probably see you at OBS in a couple of weeks. You've had tremendous success. You talked about selling one of those babies for $300,000. What's your position going into the two-year-old and training sales season? How many Pinnocks you got?
Well, I have a nice filly, City of Light, supposed to be. She was really training really well, supposed to be in the Marseille, but she tied up on us, and so I scratched her. So I'm going to be very strong on the April sale at OBS. I'm going to have, you know, half a dozen horses in the sale. So, but the Marseille, unfortunately, you know, we had to scratch that filly.
All right. Well, April's not much far behind. What are you coming up though? I'll see you at OBS.
Yeah, I'll be in OBS in April. I don't think I'm going this week. And actually, the British show start tomorrow, but I don't think I'm coming. You know, but I'll definitely be there in April.
Excellent, Carlo Vacareza. Absolute pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks and hear more about the new pizza sushi concept. Great to connect. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Carlo Vacareza, and Carlo's refreshing. He's terrific. Let's head to the break. We're going to talk to Richie Migliori, who is, I think at this point, probably arrived in Albany at the rally, and buses coming from downstate, and I think from Saratoga, as we discussed last week, and actually even the week before, we're going to talk to Grand Motion afterward, John White too. I figured, I knew that Carlo would have to have some interesting perspective on that filly. Amazing. And then, you know, it's funny. When you're